Hi, and welcome to the Live Beautifully podcast. Thank you so much for joining me wherever you are. I appreciate you so much, and I love seeing your screenshots of listening, whether you're on a walk, doing laundry, hanging out. I just love seeing it, so make sure you tag me at Katrina Scott and at Live Beautifully. I also have been loving seeing all of you print out your habit guide. If you missed the last episode, I will put the information in the show notes, but it was all about developing really good habits and how to stick to them. And I also created a free daily habits guide, and it's so, so good, you guys. So if you missed that, go to livebeautifully.com/habits and you can download your guide right away. Today's episode has been, I think, the most highly requested topic. And it's just been so hard for us to talk about, which was our fertility journey. And when I was struggling and going through multiple losses, we would get a lot of requests like, can you share more of what you're going through? And it was kind of, it's hard to find the words. It's almost like we didn't want to jinx what we were going through. And it was really too hard for us to talk about just yet. So we were healing on our own. Of course, we still are in many ways. And so we recorded this episode 11 months ago. And you'll hear the sound, especially in the beginning, the sound on the mic was a little funny. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is a little distracting. I think we need to re-record it. So we just kept waiting to try to re-record it, which it was one of those subjects that we just couldn't revisit. We were like, we talked about it, we recorded, and we just never re-recorded. So I just thought I should just get this out, especially for everyone that may be going through it right now, or anyone that is curious that wants to hear our story, instead of waiting for us to re-record. So if you hear the sound go in and out, it's actually just worse in the beginning and then it gets better. I do apologize, but I do think that it's a great conversation. And I hope that if you are going through any fertility struggle or your journey right now, our hearts are with you. I know it's tough. And I know that every day feels different. And every day, the most important thing to do is hold on to hope. And I know when you lose hope, it's a roller coaster. So we are here for you. And thank you again for tuning in. This was the first time, this was before we did our Q&A. This was the first time that I actually had Brian on the podcast. And yeah, so thank you. Thank you again. And check in with me at Live Beautifully, at Katrina Scott, and I will reshare all of you tuning in. Okay, love ya.
Okay, we are coming out of a very foggy postpartum chapter. We're here and we're on the podcast, and Brian just pointed out that he has never been on the Live Beautifully podcast.
He's been behind the scenes, pushing the buttons, setting up this whole rig.
And we had some technical difficulties even for the last like half hour. So hopefully this works.
Well, if you pay your AV guy a little bit, you know, he'll do a better job. But
I feel like I have it together and then I just don't. So, but I like how I actually thought that I would be fine having a podcast postpartum. I was like, I'll talk once a week and talk about the things that I'm going through and it's fine. And then it's literally impossible when you lose sleep. Like, losing sleep is a form of torture, and then also having a toddler. I'm surprised we're here right now.
Yeah, so am I. And I'm thank you for not having this done in the closet.
That
is your previous studio. So here we are in the house. Our dining room table.
Yeah, so Brian, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I've been waiting a long time for this moment.
One of the top requested podcast episodes from all of you, and thank you so much. A lot of you text with me, so if you don't text with me, I will make sure I put my number and everything in the show notes. You can also just go to the link. I'll just put the link. I'm not going to go into everything.
The last thing we did together was when you had me get oiled up for one of those SI like workouts during COVID.
Totally.
That was crazy.
The tropical workout.
Tropical workout. Yeah.
Yeah. After that, I was like, all right, we're going to cool off having Brian on video for a while. It's too hot. So
I got a lot of likes.
Yeah. A lot of requests to do an episode though on our fertility journey. And obviously it's just taken a long time to talk about it. And it wasn't because that we didn't want to talk about it. It's just, and the only way that I can compare this to in a different scenario is when you're in a fertility journey, it's hard to talk about it when you're still in the thick of it. Kind of like if someone were to be going through a divorce and they're still in the middle of a divorce and you're like, hey, can you talk to me all about it? And it's still just like very fresh and traumatic. That's the only way that I can really think about it. And so
we're not like superstitious, but you sort of are. Like when you're going through it, especially after we had multiple like losses, like yeah. You sort of start thinking like, oh man, like doubting and questioning like all the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
Hopeful that like what you're doing is kind of leading to the right outcome.
Yeah. Being pregnant and then talking about miscarriages is really hard. And I still did. I'll link another episode that I did. I think, yeah, I was pregnant when I did it. And it was really hard to get the words out. And still, obviously, it's hard to talk about it now, too. It still feels like yesterday. It's so crazy. But, yeah, when things are so fragile and then you have a baby and you're still in it, it is hard to give advice and things like that. But we really want to be open about our story and our journey because we know that so many of you have been on this or you have friends that are going through it. And so we want to just be a resource to you and make sure that you know that you're supported and you're not alone. But there were many times, even during this past pregnancy, that I was just so scared. Were you scared?
I'd say the most scared I was when I was stabbing you with those needles. I thought you were going to like attack me a couple times.
I was like stabbing you with that. Yeah, well, I was just wondering, actually, before we continue, if you're pregnant right now or you're going through any loss, I'm going to put in the show notes when we talk about certain things. So if you want to skip over the miscarriage talk and go straight to the IVF talk, then I will put when we start talking about that because I know that can be very triggering, obviously, to hear stories. So before we get into the thick of it, if you want, just check out the notes and the time codes. But no, were you scared while we were pregnant with Colette?
No, I don't think I was really scared. It was more like I was scared before we, you know, had her.
Yeah.
This was just going to keep happening.
Yeah.
It happened so many times. And for all of the guys out there, like, yeah, it really sucks. But it does not suck in comparison to, like, your wife's body, like, having to, like, reset and like go through all like the hormonal stuff and like especially with IVF, like there's a lot of needles and things and pain and bruises and
we're gonna scare the shit out of everyone.
No, but it was also the best thing in the world because we have Colette because of
it.
But I was more scared before because I was just afraid that it was gonna keep happening to us.
Me too.
Just happening.
Yeah. I was really scared the morning that we woke up and like she wasn't moving. And I know that towards the end of a pregnancy, your baby actually stops moving, but she hadn't moved since like 4 a.m. And we freaked out. We went to the hospital. And so and obviously she was fine, but like there are so many times like that where if you've experienced loss and you are pregnant, it's amazing. But like those appointments are so different. You're like robbed of this like blissful pregnancy. And it was so different than it was with Bella because our appointments were so exciting. And then these appointments, I just didn't want to go. And then I'd want to go. And then we'd go. And I would just hold my breath until we saw her heartbeat. And there were just so many things. But yeah, if you are going through this, you are not alone. I have a lot of your questions that you've sent through by, did I talk about the text yet? Or was that when we were having technical difficulties? If I'm repeating myself, I also am still in a postpartum
fog. Just fast forward this whole section. We already covered it once.
A lot of you send questions, and if you don't already receive my text messages, go to the show notes or the link below. But we appreciate your text messages too, because that's where we get a lot of our questions for the podcast.
And just on that note, like, it's so wild how many people are actually experiencing this, like, at the same time.
Yeah.
And you, when you're in it, you kind of sometimes feel like you're alone. But, like, you would send out a text, and so many people would reply back to you with, like, I'm literally experiencing this right now. Like, this text could not have come at, like, a better time.
Yeah.
So, like, it's sort of, like, a taboo topic. And I think, like, as a culture, we're kind of breaking down some walls, and you're doing a fantastic job, like, making it part of the conversation. But it's still something that, like, people don't talk too much about. And guys don't talk to guys about, like, this stuff, especially.
I would say it's worse between men. The guys don't talk about it. you know, like I would say women are opening up more about fertility struggles, but I think like men, I don't think that there's enough support for you guys. Everyone checks in on the woman and like.
And there were a couple times, like I would tell you, where like a random, not random, but like a friend of ours who we haven't talked
rando.
To in like years would reach out and be like, hey, Brian, like just thinking about you. I get overlooked sometimes. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It's true. But again, I think the real heavy lifting is on the woman, not just her body, but also like her mind, like for sure.
You're sweet for saying that because I do feel like it must be hard for a guy because it's so out of your control and it's like not in your body and it's an out of body experience. And then you do feel like you need to be strong and supporting the woman. And maybe no one asks if like you're okay. Are you okay?
Okay now. I'd say like the most like helpless and just like worthless I felt was like when you were going through, I think, the second DNC.
Yeah.
I'm literally like sitting in a car in a parking lot while you're FaceTiming me because of COVID.
Yeah.
And getting ready to like have like an actual like surgery. And I'm just like, what am I going to do? Like, listen to NPR on the radio? Like, it's just, you feel like weird because you can't do anything.
That was like so strange. Okay. First question was, how is it having Bella? And did you struggle to get pregnant with her? So many people asked because we didn't open up about anything then. That when we did start having fertility issues, a lot of people ask, wait, did you have issues? And I say issues like we're all in this together. It's not meant to like make anyone feel like that it's not also like normal. But yes, we.
I also think a lot of people asked us that because, no offense, we're old.
We're old.
Which is.
We old.
We go into like a doctor's appointment and the doctors are like, you guys are having a geriatric pregnancy.
Yeah.
And like, geriatric? Like, I think of my like grandma as geriatric and they're like, you're geriatric. So I think that a lot of people would ask if we had an easy time just because they know that we're a little older than like.
See, I didn't think that, but now that you pointed out, that's right. But we didn't. It was actually, I would say, looking back, so smooth and so easy. I knew that I was ovulating, and it was the first time that we ever were going to try. We went up to Whistler. We had a wild time.
Shout out to Whistler. We'd love to come back.
Yeah, have us back. But
side note, the night of Bella occurring, I think. We got so tipsy at dinner that literally we ordered dessert and they brought us our dessert in a to-go bag because they're like, you got to get out of here. You're making a scene, like something's going to break. You're going to get hurt. Like, just go. So they gave us our little bag.
It was a restaurant in the hotel. Like, they were like, yes, you guys,
we weren't,
you should go.
Anywhere, but still, go to, I'm surprised we made it back to the room.
They're like, get a room. Mm-hmm.
We did.
It was the altitude, I think. So it wasn't the wine. But yeah, that was, I would, looking back, we were so blessed and that was actually easy. And we had a very blissful, beautiful experience. And we were very, and we knew that we were lucky, but you just don't know how blessed you are until you've experienced the other side of it. And so as much as I thought like, oh, I know it could be a lot worse. You just don't know until you are in it. And so, and then what we didn't realize is that when we started to experience loss is that secondary infertility accounts for 50% of fertility issues or struggles. And so as soon as we had our first, it was like, oh, we're good. We're in the clear. But I don't even remember the month. It's so fuzzy. Think back, like
I'm pretty good at, I think, blurring things out.
Yeah,
all the time. How could you not remember that? I'm like, click off.
I know,
erased permanently. I don't want to go back there.
Yeah, I will say that, like, some of like I do know that we've conceived on like holidays and things that we don't necessarily want to associate with like a loss. So, so our first loss was we went in for. Appointment. See, my voice is already cracking. And we thought everything was going to be fine, and there was just no heartbeat. And so,
and we were recording, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So we were literally like so like just positive about the whole thing that we were recording, the whole, like, you have it on your phone still.
I do. Yeah.
Actually, like, seeing and realizing that we had no heartbeat.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously we hit stop, and then just that was like the toughest, one of the toughest days.
We like never recorded another appointment until we saw the heartbeat. Like, that's what I mean, where it kind of just robs the entire experience. Like, we were so afraid to take home videos. And I remember even when we got pregnant our second time, like sharing with our family and doing a cute thing with Bella. Like, she was too young to know, but she wrote like a little note saying that she was going to be a big sister. And we recorded that. And like, after loss, like, you just, I feel like you just don't do that again. Like, you tiptoe and you tell your family, like, oh yeah, we're trying again. We are pregnant, but we'll see. So kind of it changes the entire experience, and even like, I would say, like, the narrative. But yeah, that was so shocking to us. And then it was like, we didn't actually, it's so weird because it feels so long ago, but it feels like yesterday. I'm like trying to replay it in my head, but we wanted to make sure. So we went back the next day to make sure that there was still no heartbeat. And then even all the things that you're not supposed to do when you're pregnant, I continued to not have sushi and not drink wine. And just in case, like, I could, like, bring the baby back to life. It was, like, such a morbid thing. And then we waited a week, and then we opted to do a DNC. So if any of you are not familiar with a DNC, it's actually a surgery to help with the miscarriage, because when you miscarry on your own, a lot of times you still have to go in and get a DNC. Which were like removes tissue and things like that. So awful. But so going in, thankfully, you were able to come into the waiting room and
pre-op or whatever.
Yeah. And then you weren't in the operating room. No, I'm like thinking of, I'm getting like my wires are crossing with our our C-section, which we're going to do another episode on our birth story, by the way. And That was just, I mean, I just remember just like shaking. And oh, and the other thing that was like really crazy is when they checked me in, they said, okay, oh yeah, she's here for a miscarriage, or I'm sorry, she's here for an abortion. And I was like, oh no, I'm not here for an abortion. I'm having a miscarriage. And can you check to see if there's a heartbeat still? And they're like, oh no, it's called an abortion. I didn't know that a DNC in terms that they use at the hospital is abortion. And I was like, oh no, like I was so afraid. I don't know. I was so afraid that it, like, that there was actually a baby still there. Like, it was like such a weird, I was so confused, and I hadn't even come to terms with like what happened. But for any of you that are going through it right now, a DNC is actually very eerie. And from my experience, the easiest thing that you'll do, because it's an appointment, you go in and you go home and it's kind of just over. Obviously, there's some complications with some DNCs, but then the real hard part is like the emotional part and going through the loss after.
You were pregnant and your body and your hormones are all, you know, preparing for something that's ultimately not happening. And that's like, that's tough. Like, it's not... like, I could say all sorts of jokes about hormones and whatever, but like, it's not a joke when it's like around a topic, like,
yeah,
serious with like an experience like that bad, because it's real. Like, your body literally was like tricked, and now it's like having to undo itself in a way, and it's not a natural, doesn't seem like a very natural process to like experience.
It does feel like you're getting tricked. It's like, what the heck? Okay. So we're going to go through more questions and hopefully not cry. Okay. Why did you wait so long to have kids? We met when we were 19 and 20, and I feel like we just kind of hit the ground running.
No other like thing to say. We put our heads down and just kind of grinded for the better part of a decade, and, you know, building something pretty cool. But at the same time, like, a lot of family gatherings and family, you know, things and holidays, like, oh, when are you guys having kids? And like, you hear it like 10 years in a row and you're like, okay, we're gonna just do this on our own terms. And that's what we got to the point where it's like, when we're ready, like, that would be our answer. And I think we did do it.
I don't even remember that.
When we were, I don't remember.
You do? Like, yeah, you felt the pressure?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone asked me. Maybe they're just asking you, like, hey, when are you going to have kids? I know that, like, but looking back, we could have, but I felt like we couldn't. And I feel, I've shared this before, but I didn't want to start a family if I knew we wouldn't be good parents. And when I say that is you have to have some time. Our mornings, it's like, what, 3 hours in the morning? It's like getting ready for preschool and balancing Colette and doing all this stuff. And then it's the afternoons. We're going to bring Bella to our dance. And then it's dinner. And then it's all night. You're up with them. And then weekends. We were entrepreneurs. I just felt like we will be amazing parents. But right now, our time was so, like, I remember, like, clocking in, like, 80-hour weeks.
I remember, like, you'd be doing, like, the weekly schedule at, like, 11:59 on a Sunday. Like, yeah. And that was years, same thing, year in, year out.
Yep.
And I worked, going to bed with your laptop in between us, like, it happens. Like, it does.
Do you remember our Sunday mornings where I'm like, yes, we'll walk and get coffee, and you'd, like, wait to drink coffee, and then it'd be, like, 1 p.m., and I'd almost be done with the weekly schedule, and you were, like, literally, like,
what do you want me to make for dinner? I'll start in, like, an hour.
We could get into that phase in our life, like, on a different episode, but, okay, what was... So the difference between our losses. So with a DNC, luckily you can actually get testing. We didn't have testing with our first loss, and usually they don't do it unless you really ask. I think that it was just assumed because we were older. But with our second loss, that was pre-COVID. So first loss was at 10 weeks. The DNC was at 11. We were at 11 weeks. We got pregnant the second time during the holidays, and then when we had the DNC, then that was after the lockdown. So it was a few months later, same thing. Or no, I'm sorry, not same thing. My brain. We
about that fog.
Yeah.
Still here.
This is why I couldn't do podcast episodes. I'm sorry. But you couldn't even come into my appointments. So I remember just texting you. Right? Did I text you or I just came out in the parking lot and told you that it wasn't growing, right? Okay.
Yeah. And that's the one where we were so optimistic. Oh, we can get it to grow. Like, we just would keep going back.
So they measured the pregnancy or the, I don't even call it like the baby. I feel so weird saying like the, I don't know. It just is so hard to speak the words. It's just hard, but they were like, you know, it's not growing. And so, but there's a really strong heartbeat. So maybe you have your dates wrong. And I'm like, there's no way I have my dates wrong. Like, it's not like we're having sex every night. I was like,
I'd love to have that problem.
Yeah. That night on that holiday, I know that we did. So I was like, I don't know. Like, I think that this was the date. And then we waited another week. Or maybe like even a few days, and then we went in and still no growth, but a strong heartbeat. And then she said, you know, I really think that you need to prepare for a miscarriage, just so you know. And I said, but there's still a heartbeat. This is so hard to believe, and you don't want to believe it. But then I wasn't really crying. I was just more like, how could this be happening again? But I do remember you weren't able to come in, which was so devastating during COVID for so many people that had to experience so many things isolated and on so many levels. But and then that was when you were in the parking garage at Cedars. And I think that was really sad too, is that going to the same hospital that we had Bella, where it was like such a positive place to go back there, now it's like super traumatic. And after our birth story now too.
Oh, which will be kind of jumping around, but do you remember the second time we had to go back for the second DNC? You're literally like checking into the hospital and they're like, good to see you again. Like, it's just those little triggering like things that like some person is just doing their job says, and you're like, oh, that just stings.
Yeah, that was rough. And like, obviously everyone is just trying to survive, and it was like such a hard time, but that was tough. And that, I remember just like shaking uncontrollably. I just couldn't believe that it was happening again. And this time we did know the gender, so that was hard.
And then we did do testing. And so that was, the testing results came back as trisomy 16. Gosh, it's so crazy how these things, like you have it and then part of you just wants to forget it because it's so bad. But I believe it's trisomy 16.
Which is like, in layman's terms, there's like either an extra or a missing chromosome somewhere in the...
Yeah. So in the end, the reason why we did end up getting a DNC is we did lose the heartbeat. And so I refused to even believe that there was like something wrong. It was like so hard. And then our third loss, it was called a chemical pregnancy.
Which I still don't understand.
Me neither. I don't understand it because it's, you're not even like a month pregnant and you take a pregnancy test and it's positive, but then you still end up getting your period. So it's just like, it was there. It didn't really stick. There's a lot of things behind chemical pregnancies. Maybe the embryo didn't implant or something. And so I think we were already getting recommendations to see a specialist, but I think after that third time, like that was just kind of, okay, we should figure something else out.
Yeah, and that's when our doctor said you guys would be amazing candidates for IVF because you've proven that you can have a very healthy, vibrant little girl, Bella. So you're, just for that reason, she's like, you can definitely
and you can get pregnant. Yeah. So that was another question that came in, is that why did you go straight to IVF and didn't do other routes? So there are other fertility treatments that you can do if you're struggling to conceive, or I didn't even know, like there's so many things like sperm spinning. Do you know what sperm spinning is?
No,
did I ever tell you about that?
I don't ever know what that is.
No. Sounds kind of kinky.
Picture myself in the kitchen, like spinning like pizzas.
Okay, you don't have to like go into what your visual is.
Yeah. You said it.
I know, but it's like they get the like the best sperm. There's so many things where it would be great to actually have a fertility specialist on here instead of us sharing our visuals of spinning pizzas. But they like pick the best sperm and this and that. The reason why we went straight to IVF was not only because we knew that it was the health of the embryo that was the issue, and we know that we could hopefully, you know, get pregnant again and have implantation occur, but also it's another way to freeze your eggs or create embryos. And so I had never frozen my eggs when I was younger. And looking back, listen, if you are thinking about it, you should do it. So I know that freezing your eggs can be really expensive. So if the company that you work for, and you can always ask them if they can support you in it, but if you don't get support for that, there's a great foundation that I work with as an ambassador called Baby Quest, and they provide funding for women who want to either freeze their eggs or if a couple wants to go through IVF and different things like that. So definitely check them out. But if you are thinking about it and you do have the means to do it, I would do it. And thinking back, I probably should have. But doing IVF was something that we could do where we could freeze embryos. What was IVF like for you? And were you overwhelmed when you got all the medicine?
I remember I screwed it up so hard. So first off, shout out to all the IVF peeps out there. Because seriously, whether you're a doctor or a person going through it, like, it's pretty awesome. So, you know, as like the guy, again, you have it very easy and you're just literally, you feel like so bad because was it once a day or twice? I can't remember if sometimes it was twice.
Egg retrieval was, oh my gosh, so funny thinking back, like it's like all a blur, but like the egg retrieval was 2 weeks of shots. And then what we didn't realize is that then once you do IVF, or you do the implantation of the embryo, then you do like, I think I did like 8 weeks of progesterone.
That was great.
I still have bruises from that. I literally put on a bathing suit 2 weekends ago and the girlfriends that I was on a trip with looked and they're like, you still have 2 bruises like on your butt. It was so intense.
That's all me. Like, that feels so bad because it just gets so like tender and it's sort of like, why would you put a syringe into something that's already like bruised? It just feels bad. bad.
The scar tissue.
Sometimes when like I would go to like do it and it wouldn't go through your skin.
Anything, remember when I screwed it
up at the beginning and you brought in like you hired a nurse to do it because I was so bad.
He ended up giving me four times the amount of what is it called?
Gonal
F. And so I was on the fast track of an egg retrieval.
Yeah, what did that? It like stimulates the like follicles or something crazy.
They were like, "Oh, like this is not good." But they couldn't. I couldn't just like go down to the normal amount. They had to. Then he had to continue giving me a lot because it was. They didn't want it to like crash and fail. I don't know. So I ended up having a nurse. Her name was Rose. Come to the house and help. And then you would stand there and you're like, sorry. But then you ended up doing the rest of the stuff. But I was
let me just explain this. Gonal F stuff is not like a normal shot. Like put a needle into a vial and like pull it out. It's like pre-dosed things. And if you like just start like messing with it, like twisting it, it's actually when you're twisting it, upping the dosage. And it was not explained well. I'm not saying by you, but I just didn't know what the heck it was doing.
We had videos.
Do you remember though, where after the fact they're like, that was probably the best thing you could have ever done?
Yeah, my follicles were ready. But it's shocking with IVF that you go home with vials and medicine, like crazy hormone stuff in your own home, and then you're expected to administer pretty intense stuff on your own.
I do want to say it is like kind of like funny to think about like when you are the guy and you're literally stabbing estrogen into your wife, you're like, this could go one of two ways. Please be the good way. It's just
like for
the time, yeah, for the times when like it would poke and not go in, like it was just like just bad. Like I felt so bad so many times. Remember, you would record it because we documented the whole process, and there'd be recordings of me like missing. Like it's just so bad.
I do remember you stabbing me, and
that's what it feels like after like the 90th time you do it. You're just
and a lot of women do that themselves, especially if their like husband is sensitive to needles or travels a lot for work. Like a couple times, I traveled back east and. Shout out to Angela. She had to do it for me. And she was like, oh, your skin, like it's so, like it feels like you're putting a needle into leather at that point. Because even the skin is sensitive. And one of our friends used the mixing needle, putting the medicine in another friend when she was doing an egg retrieval. And like, that's a really thick needle. Like you can like really royally mess this up at home. So you just have to get your stuff in order.
The mixing needle is not even a needle. It's a pipe.
Yeah. I'm going to find a good tutorial and put it down below. Something that we should have watched before we like tried to do this.
For all the guys out there, watch it multiple times.
Yeah. Okay. What was the craziest IVF memory that you have? Of like things that we went through.
I would say like the craziest part was really positive. It was when we actually went to the appointment to do, is it called the implantation?
Yeah.
Where like before your eyes, you are literally like, wow, modern science is crazy. Like we are literally in this room and there are all these technicians and doctors and pros coming in. Mm-hmm. You can like see exactly the moment when that embryo is put into the mom, and it's crazy to see that like in real time, because it's like you're watching like the miracle of life like actually like kind of unfold before you. So I'd say like that was in the fact that it was happening 10 miles down the street from where we live. Like it's just awesome.
We didn't have to go to Whistler.
Well, I still shout out to Whistler. We'd love to come back.
What hotel was that? Give him a shout.
Fairmont? No.
Something
nice.
Something
it was
fancy.
Really nice. That's
the fanciest thing we've ever done.
Yeah. Four seasons.
Wow.
It was the season of love.
So, yeah, I would say like modern miracles, like the ability to go somewhere, and we're so lucky that we were able to do that and that it worked too, because you don't know in that situation either. A lot of you asked a question, and this can apply to miscarriages or IVF, is how we stuck together as a couple and like really survived it, because it fertility struggles is actually one of the leading causes of divorce. So how do you think that we,
I don't think like divorce is ever an option. So aww, like,
you're cute. It was an option for me. Just kidding.
I don't know. It's sort of like if that's really like the truth, like it's sort of like comes back to fight or flight. Like some people are going to fight for it. Others are just like, this is too much. And then they kind of split up and it cracks, you know, the cracks start and then they turn into bigger cracks. I just think like IVF is absolutely a very good way to test your relationship. Like it's like a stress test for sure. I feel like we have all sorts of stress tests. So like we're, I think, in a pretty good position.
Like, yeah. Like
we can deal with what we deal with.
Yeah. We were, when I think about it, it's like we've been through so many things, like different chapters in our life. Like we made it being teenagers. Like I was a teenager when I met you, and then we made it through college. We made it through long distance. You were in Australia, and then we made it moving across the country together. We moved in together before we were married, and planning a wedding is another huge stressor. Like there's so many things that we've been through that it almost just felt like another day in the park as a couple, but really, really heavy, heavy stuff. I think my advice, we never even would consider during that time as divorce, but I understand that there's so much stress for so many people that if that is something that you guys are at the point, you're at like a breaking point, is you're both going through something and both of your feelings and your stress are so valid. And I remember the day that I realized that you were having a hard time with it, because you were so strong with me and you were always there for me and you were so sweet, is our neighbor said that she saw you walking Winston. And I hear you cry. And she was like, I saw Brian crying on the sidewalk walking the dog. And I was like, oh my gosh, he was. And then I realized in that moment, oh, like he had to leave the house to feel. But what I realized is that like I wasn't the only one going through things, and you were so strong for me that you're both in it. You're gonna experience things that you feel so isolated in, but you know, whether you had to go do something for work and I was home, that's hard too. You having to leave and go do something while I'm sitting in the dark. And then if I go do something, then you have to kind of like sit with it too. So I think like no matter what you're both doing, if you're not together in your pain, you're still feeling it. And one is always trying to lift the other one up. And then it heightens other things in your relationship. So if there are things that are not healed in you, those things become more apparent during the hard times. And so it's really important to not bring in past issues when you're in the middle of a storm. And I'm not how else to say that, but I would say like that was my, that would be my advice, is that when you're going through really tough things together, is not to associate that with your past things that have nothing to do with that. When you're going through fertility issues, it's so heartbreaking that there's no comparison that you can really pull from, and you have to stick together, check in on one another, rub each other's back. Brian's so good about just like randomly like giving me a hug and things like that, which I feel like you just do a little more of that in your home.
Check in every once in a while.
Yeah, I think that you have to check in with each other. And I don't know who said this, but I loved it. And it was like a way to make your marriage last through so many different chapters in your life is that your interest and care and love for your partner's mental health above everything else is the most important thing. And so, you know, you both have tough days, and at the end of the day, kind of like picking on each other, there's going to obviously be the moments where you're like frustrated or whatever, but making sure that the mental health of your partner is healthy and that you are their number one cheerleader is the most important part. And so when you're going through something like fertility struggles or loss, that is probably above everything. I hope I articulated that great. It's hard to find the words. Last couple questions are, what is something that you wish you knew looking back? Because we kind of just went into everything pretty naive. We obviously didn't even know how to do the shots when we started those. So what's something that we both wish that we knew?
I do think doing egg retrieval, probably we should have done that just to like sleep a little better, like as we were like working our butts off for the last, you know, however many years. I think that would have been something wise to do.
Totally.
And then I also think just, again, like if you're going through it, like talk to your friends about what you're kind of going through, just because like how many of our friends and family have gone through the exact same scenario? Like it's so common.
It's crazy.
It's so not talked about.
It's not talked about. I think something that I would wish that I could do is go back and know what to say to my friends who are experiencing it, because there are so many things that, not that it's the wrong thing to say, but now I realize looking back, I don't even know what I said to someone that was like experiencing loss. But when someone says, well, this wasn't meant to be. And when you're in it, you're like, no, this baby, like this was meant to be. Or what do you think that you did wrong? And you're like, oh my God, was it me that did something wrong? Almost in an indirect way, blaming the woman or the couple. Another one is just stay positive, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm just going to smile my way through fertility and hope for the best. What do you think would be the best thing to say to somebody?
Not say much. I'd say less is more, and just give them a huge hug and let them know like you're there. I'd say like we seeked out people when we were ready to like get a little bit of help, I would say.
Yeah. And everyone that gone through loss, they're like, this is horrible. You don't deserve this. No one does. And we're here for you. I think like showing up and not expecting them to answer the door too, and just like bringing dinner or something. Like Katie, my sister-in-law, got me socks that just say like, I've got this, when we started like IVF. And I thought that was so nice, where it was like, not even saying much like you're saying, but just a little gesture that says like, okay, this truly, truly is horrific, but like you've got this. And just, and to like, you know, obviously it's so easy to say once we're on the other side of it, like keep going, because when you're in it, it's awful. And then sometimes you do have to go different avenues to grow your family. And we were talking about that. We wanted to grow our family no matter what. So like, what was the next step if this didn't work? We're very lucky that we have Colette. This is crazy. This is something that I wish that I knew. Actually, I don't know if I wish that I knew this, but I would have been like maybe a little more scared, but like 1 in 7 of your friends will experience infertility. And so when you look at your group of friends, that does seem low.
Well, yeah. Maybe it's because we're geriatric.
Like, yeah.
Once you hit the you know, 35 plus mark, I think they consider you geriatric, right?
Oh, yeah. 1 in 4 pregnancies lead to miscarriage. And then we mentioned it earlier that secondary infertility accounts for 50% of infertility. 87% of women going through infertility have anxiety, and another 41% reported feeling depressed, which I find interesting that that's only on women. Like, what about the guys? I don't know what the stat is, but globally, over 48 million couples are experiencing infertility. And then infertility is one of the leading causes of divorce. And this is crazy that 85% of fertility treatments are paid out of pocket. So that's where Baby Quest comes into play. But that's like one of those things that we're so blessed that we were able to take those steps. And when you're in it, you don't realize like it's crazy to say like we are lucky that we could do IVF. And when you're doing IVF, like to think like, oh, I'm lucky that I'm able to do this. You don't feel very lucky while you're doing it, but a privilege to be able to do that. Okay. Final question. Who do you think that really helped, like when you were when you were feeling sad? Like, who did you talk to?
I don't really think I did a good job, like, talking to people about how I felt about what was going on. Hmm. I just sort of, like, packed it up and just, that was it. But when it kept happening, though, that's when I was just like, man, like, this is a lot of baggage to kind of, like, carry around. Luckily, we were able to have Colette because I'd still be carrying it. I think, like, the fact that we have Colette, like, washed a lot of that away entirely, hopefully, for you, too. Like, I can still remember exactly how it felt to, like, go through it, but I don't think it, you know, overall, like, affected me long-term because we were able to have Colette.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of that quote, you don't realize how heavy everything is until you put it down. Like, when you're carrying it around every day, it weighs on you, and then when you're finally, I probably messed up the quote, but like when you put it down and you look back, you're like, how did I even function? And I kind of did the same thing where I, the day after DNC, remember I filmed, or I, no, I didn't, I'm like not like a workout or something, but like I filmed for something for work that I had to do, and I just didn't tell anyone, and I was like so afraid to not carry on that next day and like pretend like everything was normal. And looking back, I should have just been like resting. It was like so weird.
Which, again, you never know what someone's going through. Guys, gals, like just give them the benefit of the doubt. Like it could be something like this, like that we're talking about, that they're choosing not to tell you, but they're still kind of experiencing it nonetheless.
You know what it was? I was on a stage. There was like 500 people. I was on a panel. Like that, what was I doing? I should have just been like, I can't go. That's the other thing, is that we feel so much pressure to like keep going and not our inconvenience anyone else in our own trauma. Like we don't want to bring our own pain to everybody else. And if we commit to something, or at least that's how I feel, I didn't want anyone else to feel like it inconvenienced them for what we were going through. Okay, we will end on something light. What is your favorite part about Colette?
Wow, there's a lot of things, but before I answer that, it's funny because a lot of parents who have two kids, like we always ask them, like, how do you love, like, go from loving one child to like loving two? And they're just like, it just happens, like this new space like opens up in like your heart and your world, and like you just, it just works. Like, I don't even know how to eloquently like describe that. But, you know, like before Colette, we had Bella, very fortunately, and she was the center of the universe. And now we've got two centers kind of like run around in different speeds and directions. And
that's so true. It's kind of hard to imagine anyone else being the center of your universe.
What's the question again? Like, what is my, like, favorite thing?
Yeah, what's your favorite thing about her?
Well, I love that she's, like, your little twin. She's like, obviously, so I'm sure you'll flash up a picture of what you looked like when you were a baby.
Yeah.
At the same age that Colette is now. And, like, it is, like, an exact match.
Yeah.
Basically. Down to, like, your little, like, I don't want to call it a birthmark. But anyway.
Yeah, my birthmark. It's like a stork mark or whatever.
Yeah, and she's just, and she's so different, too. Like, that's the thing. Like, we kind of assumed we'd just get another Bella, and wow, like, totally different.
Totally different. My favorite thing is the way, like, she'll kind of, like, I'll be, like, doing the dishes, or I'm in the kitchen. She's, like, sitting in her little chair, and then I'll catch eye contact with her, and the look on her face, she, like, the smile, and she just lights up. And she makes eye contact with you. You can't even break it. And you're just like, oh. And like I go up and I just rub my nose with her. And she just breathes in my face. And I'm like, gosh. It's like so crazy. I could cry. Like I, of course, it's like how can I love anything as much as I love Bella? And it's truly not only the same, but it's in different ways. And it's so beautiful. And they are truly very different babies already.
It's also so nice seeing like how Bella really does love her little sister, and she is so helpful. And she literally thinks Colette is her like baby.
Yeah,
like it's it's awesome how we kind of like positioned all of that.
We should definitely do another episode on what helped, like bringing home a baby.
Bribes.
To another baby. Like, don't blame the baby and like tips like that. But yeah, they lollipops. It really is so nice. And she's such a little angel. We love her. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. We love you guys so much. And
I thought you were thanking me just now.
Oh, I am. Thanks for coming, honey. Thanks for coming over.
I'd love to come back.
And if any of you are in the thick of it right now, our heart is wrapped around you and both of you as a couple and your entire family. And we're here for you. And we love you. And this was a tough podcast episode to get through, but we did it, honey.
We did.
We did. And I've been looking forward to this day for so long because I said maybe I'll feel like we can talk about it when we're on the other side. And I feel like we're finally on the other side.
Shout out to Peggy, the neighbor at the end of the street who caught me crying because I definitely needed it.
Aw, love you. She came over last night and brought Play-Doh to Bella. She's the best. All right, love you guys. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much for tuning into Live Beautifully today. I hope you loved this episode and that you feel empowered, connected, and of course, inspired to live beautifully. Make sure you subscribe so you're the first to know when a new episode comes out. I love seeing your reviews and hearing how this podcast is making a positive impact on your life. So if you haven't yet, I'd love for you to leave a review. I read everything from you and it means the absolute world to me. I'll be sharing your reviews and stories on Instagram at Katrina Scott. Also, for Ask Me Anything episodes, literally anything, text me on my cell at 213-205-3604. 213-205-3604 with anything you'd like to talk about. Title your text AMA for Ask Me Anything so I can look out for your message. Thanks again for tuning in and sharing this with your girlfriends. I cannot wait to chat soon. Let's live beautifully together.